Welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Seth Arns, and today we have with us Eric Balkin, who is Executive Director of the Glen Canyon Institute. This is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to restore Glen Canyon and a free-flowing Colorado River through Glen Canyon. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
First, I was wondering if you could tell our listeners a little bit about you personally, your experience in Glen Canyon, and a little bit about your organization.
Yeah. So my personal background is that I'm a Salt Lake native. I was born and raised here, more or less. I moved around a little bit, but the snow and the desert always drew me back. I fell in love with floating rivers in high school when we started to run river trips on the Green River down in Labyrinth and Stillwater Canyons. And I started to read books about the river. I started to read the Ed Abbey books, and I learned, you know, kind of the history of the river and then the history of Glen Canyon. And then when I was doing my bachelor's degree at the University of Utah, that's when I started working for Glen Canyon Institute as an intern 20 years ago. So I've been a part of this organization for quite some time. And, Glen Canyon Institute was a nonprofit founded 30 years ago by Richard Ingebretson, who's a physician and a physics professor at the University of Utah, with a crazy idea of restoring Glen Canyon. The organization was founded when the reservoir behind Glen Canyon Dam, Lake Powell, was full. And people just said, that's a crazy idea. Why would we even talk about it? But even back then, you know, there was a lack of scientific data around the impacts of Glen Canyon Dam. And so the starting point of GCI was really starting research and studies around the impacts of Glen Canyon Dam and trying to think of a different path forward for Western Water.
So we were talking with Dr. Jack Schmidt about kind of in general the crisis that's unfolding in the Colorado River Basin in terms of water availability. And that part of the crisis is pretty well known. That there's low water in our major reservoirs, that we've had extremely bad winters in the upper Colorado Basin this past year, and that water storage at many of these reservoirs is becoming critically low. What I'd really like to ask you about is, are some of these other impacts that we don't normally think about when thinking about drought and low water in particularly Lake Powell and the Glen Canyon region? What are some of the impacts that the average listener might not have heard about?
Yeah, I mean, when your average listener is thinking about the impacts of a regional drought or aridification, as you scientists like to call it now, you think about reservoirs depleting, less water in rivers, and you think that's got to be bad for the environment. Counterintuitively, in Glen Canyon, we're actually seeing a rebirth of ecosystems because of this declining reservoir system. When Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1963, it began to drown one of the Colorado River's great ecosystems, the place that people considered to be worthy of being a national park, Glen Canyon. And 186 miles of Glen Canyon was drowned as Lake Powell filled through the 1980s and then 90s. But beginning in the year 2000, we start to see a decline in the reservoir levels. And as the reservoir of Lake Powell has dropped over the past 26 years, what has emerged is this incredible network of tributary riparian canyons that are full of vibrant life, vegetation, native plant species, and wildlife too. Beavers, bighorn sheep, deer, all sorts of frogs and toads and snakes, and the whole ecosystem is coming back to life. And that's because there's a lot of natural spring-fed water and creeks and streams that naturally flow in Glen Canyon. Before it was drowned, it was a really green and verdant place. And so as the reservoir behind Glen Canyon Dam is starting to go away, what we're seeing is actually a rebirth of those ecosystems that were there before.
That definitely is counterintuitive. I know, having been down at Lake Powell and doing research in this area, I'm familiar with this. However, the average recreational user of Lake Powell probably isn't seeing some of these things, because when you go to, say, Bullfrog Boat Ramp and some of these drier areas, it looks pretty barren. There's just not a lot of plants. Sometimes you see some prickly, non-native plants like Russian thistle. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that, maybe some misconceptions about the region.
Most visitors who are going to the reservoir are probably familiar with the sight of, you know, buoys that are high and dry and boat ramps that are a half mile away from the water and kind of this dystopian landscape of a drying reservoir. And, if you are in the immediate vicinity of the reservoir, that is what you see, because it's kind of this apocalyptic zone where there's not a lot of life, or the vegetation that you do see is tumbleweeds or, invasive grasses or stuff like that. It's not until you hike away from the reservoir that you start to see this ecological rebirth taking place. Or if you're coming in from the outside of the canyons and you're backpacking in or day hiking in from somewhere else, you're going to see that too. You're going to see the ecosystems that used to be inundated by the reservoir that are now out of water. So yeah, I think, for most people, and even a lot of media coverage, when journalists go to cover the reservoir, they're not, able to take that time to go hike a couple hours away from the reservoir to see what's happening up in these side canyons. It's the side canyons and the tributary rivers, Main Stem Colorado River, the San Juan River, the Escalante River. That's where you see a lot of that ecological rebirth happening. So you have to get away from the reservoir a little bit and hike. And sometimes it takes an hour or two to get far enough away to see those ecosystems, but they are there in force.
So I know I've found that working down in this region, one of the most surprising things to me was just how quickly some of these ecosystems have grown back, and the fact that this landscape is so dynamic. Could you tell me a little bit about how current management, land management, water management, and policy considers or doesn't consider some of these emerging landscapes?
I would say that at the moment, the management and the policies from, Bureau of Reclamation, which is the agency controlling the water, to the National Park Service, which is the agency controlling the actual park itself, it's really not up to speed yet to manage these new ecosystems. And to be fair to the Park Service, Glen Canyon National Recreation Area has probably changed more than any other national park unit in the country, except for Lake Mead, which is in a kind of similar position of fluctuating reservoir levels. The Park Service doesn't have the resources to be monitoring and inventorying all these ecosystems that, as you say, are changing really quickly. Some of these ecosystems, like, for example, I was just in 50 Mile Canyon this spring, and it had been a couple years since I had been there, and I was shocked by the changes that had taken place in just 2 years. There were places where, there was some vegetation that was almost as tall as I was the last time I was there. And I was looking at my repeat photos. And now there are just 20-foot tall trees with shade canopy, with songbirds everywhere. And I couldn't even believe where I was. I was like, is this the same place that I was in before? So they're changing so fast. These ecosystems are just rebounding so quickly. It's really hard for the Park Service to keep up with that, given that their main prerogative in Glen Canyon is to manage boat ramps and to manage reservoir recreation. What GCI has been advocating to these agencies and to the public is that we need to start thinking about Glen Canyon less as just a reservoir destination, but more like a national park with ecosystems that deserve protection.
That's a really good point about how dynamic and rapidly changing this system is. Since the year 1998, reservoir elevations in Lake Powell have dropped about 170 feet and exposed nearly 100,000 acres of land that used to be a lake bed that's now a terrestrial ecosystem. And some of that change has happened even more recently. Since 2011, the reservoir has dropped 135 feet. So these are extremely rapid changes that are going on. Now, from your nonprofit organization perspective and considering the mission of your organization, How has the situation changed in Lake Powell when thinking about water storage now compared to 20 or 30 years ago?
So 20 or 30 years ago, right, the system was basically full. And I think water managers were looking at that and saying, this system is working perfectly. It's hard to imagine it, but at that time in the early 2000s, the water managers were just finishing the surplus guidelines, trying to figure out what to do with all the extra water in the system, okay? And then, beginning in the year 2000, we get this dramatic five-year period of really low runoff, and that's when we start planning for a dry hydrology. So at the end of the 2000s is when GCI proposed the fill me first idea that basically said, look, we don't have enough water to fill both Powell and Meade. What if we fill Meade first and give Glen Canyon a chance to, you know, rebound and come back to life? Now we're in a place where we can't even fill Lake Meade. If we moved all of the water in Lake Powell today and put it into Lake Meade, Meade would only be 55% full or somewhere around there. So we don't have enough water to fill any reservoirs. Now we're in a place of what I call reservoir triage. The decision makers in charge of this river system are looking at crashing reservoirs. Lake Powell is just, 35 feet away from the critical elevation, or even less than that, 28 feet away from the critical elevation where the dam's, structural integrity comes into question. We're draining water out of Flaming Gorge. We're holding water back from Lake Meade just to prop up Lake Powell. So now we're in a situation where the reservoirs are crashing and water managers are starting to consider new ideas. There's a conference going on in Boulder as we speak right now where people are discussing some of these ideas. And this idea of storing all the water in Lake Meade is no longer crazy. It was crazy when we first started talking about it in the 2000s. But the reality of the hydrology is forcing decision makers to think about those different storage strategies.
So thinking about the future in Glen Canyon and Lake Powell, what would your organization like to see the future to look like for Glen Canyon?
Our vision for Glen Canyon is that it is created a national park or designated as a national park. There's been a lot of talk about re-engineering Glen Canyon Dam lately or modifying Glen Canyon Dam. That can look a lot of different ways, but I mentioned this structural problem at the dam because the hydropower penstocks are at a certain elevation, and below that elevation, the only way to release water out of that dam is through four small metal tubes called the river outlet works. They were not designed to run full time. The last few times they have been used, they've experienced cavitation. So a lot of the water managers are really hesitant to rely on those outlet works. And now we have the lower basin states of California, Arizona, and Nevada saying, hey, we need to re-engineer this dam just so we can get our water. GCI's vision for re-engineering Glen Canyon Dam entails drilling bypass tunnels around the dam, similar to what was drilled when the dam was first constructed in 1956. Two large diversion tunnels that can accept the full flow of the Colorado River to flow around the dam site. If these diversion tunnels were built, there could be gates in them that, in case of an emergency flood or the system, more water entered the system than it could handle, you could close those gates and decision makers could have this option of potentially storing water in Glen Canyon again. But by having diversion tunnels that would create operational flexibility for the water managers and then give this new burgeoning ecosystem that's being reborn, give that its full opportunity to be reborn in its full sense. As you know, some of these ecosystems that have been out of water for over a quarter century, you can hardly tell that they were ever inundated by the reservoir. The trees are so big. You know, the ecosystems are so diverse, there's so much plant life and wildlife, you can't even tell that it was underwater. You would never guess that you would have been under Lake Powell 25 years prior. That opportunity exists for all of Glen Canyon. And as a national park, you know, it could be managed to optimize for those resources.
That's great, Eric. One more question about the future. What do you see as kind of a worst case scenario of future, thinking about future weather, future climate, and future management actions in terms of what your organization's mission is to restore Glen Canyon?
Well, we can influence the climate by reducing our carbon emissions, but we have to deal with the cards that are dealt is when it comes to weather and this hydrology. And for that reason, we need to be ready, right? The system needs to be ready to deal with really low runoffs. And that's what we're looking at right now on the Colorado River. So a worst case scenario for Glen Canyon would be that the infrastructure problem at the dam just gets ignored, which has more or less been the approach of the powers that be. They're just kind of propping this reservoir up as much as possible and hoping for wet years to come. But if those wet years don't come, Lake Powell could crash. We could see the reservoir drop to below that threshold of 3,500 feet. It's forecasted to do it this summer, okay? So in that worst case scenario, you could see those four metal outlet tubes start to fail from cavitation. Whether it happens all at once or one by one, that water could theoretically be trapped in Glen Canyon. That means that no water would be able to flow through the Grand Canyon and to the 25 million people downstream. That is the worst case scenario with Glen Canyon.
Now, for the last part of our conversation, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about a new initiative that Glen Canyon Institute has. I know that your group is moving forward, and I don't think it's started yet, but perhaps you could tell us a little bit about a community science program that you're, I think, in the early planning stages of.
Yeah, so we're really excited about this. As I mentioned before, there hasn't been a ton of research done. You know, there's the vegetation survey work that you've done, and then, you know, there's work that our friends at the Returning Rapids Project have been doing on the main stem corridors. But when you look at how big this place is and how much is coming back to life, there's a big vacuum of research. So we've been really excited to launch a community science initiative where any visitor to Glen Canyon can use apps like iNaturalist or Merlin or eBird or Survey 123, and they can make observations with their phone. So if you're, you know, if any of your listeners are hiking into Glen Canyon, maybe off the Hole in the Rock Road, you know, if they're going down Coyote Gulch and hiking down the Escalante River, or if they're hiking down Davis Gulch or 50 Mile Canyon or any of the canyons from the eastern side, like Forgotten Canyon, Moki Canyon, a lot of these places are accessible from by foot. Or if you're doing a Cataract Canyon trip and you're going down below Big Drop 3, anything below Big Drop 3 is part of the recovery area, right? And the public now has an opportunity to take these scientific observations with their phone through iNaturalist. And our goal is to kind of have all that data live on one place at our website at glencanyon.org. So if you go to our website, glencanyon.org, and you go to research and the Community Science Initiative, you can see the initial observations that we've been able to make with our research, looking at some beaver sites down there. And then there's a page about the Community Science Project where it gives you some more information about how you can submit your own observations. These community science tools are so cool because it kind of puts the power in the hands of the people who are visiting the place. So if you're down there, if you're making trips to Glen Canyon, we want to see what you're seeing. We want to catalog that data. And hopefully that data can be used by those Park Service, the resource managers, and hopefully it can influence public policy eventually.
Okay, now I want to end our conversation with a little bit lighter of a question. We've all heard, probably read some stories about some of the weird things that have turned up in Lake Mead as Lake Mead has gotten really low. So I'm going to end this with two questions. One, what is the most amazing thing that you've seen in some of these recovering landscapes? And then just simply, what's the weirdest or strangest thing that you've seen?
Oh, man. Well, the most amazing thing I have seen in Glen Canyon, I was on a trip with NPR in 2021, I think. We were walking into Cathedral in the desert, and, this place is kind of isolated. It's sort of like this mound of sand in this big amphitheater with a waterfall. There's really no way in or out unless you're rappelling in from the waterfall. And as I was walking in, I saw a 6-point buck deer just standing there at the top of the sediment. And I just thought, I thought it was hallucinating for a second. And then Nate Rott, the correspondent, I was like, do you see this deer? He's like, I see it. I was like, let's go up. Like, how did this deer get there? And we walked up on top of the sediment and it was gone. And like, we we walked out of there, you know, it's like 100 feet to the reservoir. And I know that deer can swim a little ways, but like, there is no way out of there. Like, where did this deer come from? We were all scratching our heads that night around the campfire about the deer. And as far as the kind of most strange things I've seen down there, I mean, it's, you've experienced that. You see a lot of beer cans and soda cans from the 1970s and 80s. I saw a Schlitz beer can, like one of the miniature ones, that was just in perfect condition. And I couldn't help but think, was this Ed Abbey's beer? Because that was like his favorite beer, right, from his books. I always thought to myself, man, maybe this was one of Ed Abbey's beers that he, you know, infamously liked to litter around the canyon country.
Well, maybe it was Ed Abbey's beer, or just a houseboater enjoying the times on the reservoir. Eric Balkin, Executive Director of Glen Canyon Institute, thank you so much for being with us today on This Green Earth.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.